heat is in proportion to the want of true knowledge. This is the heat.
From our oceans to wildlife, plastics are everywhere and pose a major threat to the planet. We'll discuss how the international community is responding. Hello, I'm Arlen Vidov and this is The Heat. French President Emmanuel Macron calls plastic pollution a time bomb for the world. The United Nations Environmental Programme says plastics are hurting ecosystems, warming the climate and damaging our health. In February of 2022, countries agreed on the need for a legally binding United Nations treaty to end plastic pollution around the world. This week, delegates from 175 countries got to work with the second round of talks. CGTN's Natalie Malgus begins our coverage with this report from Paris.
Stand up! It's been 5 days of intense debate at the UNESCO HQ in Paris.
What do we want?
Global plastics treaty!
When do we want it?
Now!
According to climate activists, the stakes couldn't be higher.
Only elimination, reduction, a full life cycle approach, transparency and a just transition, only those can bring success. Because the truth is that we cannot recycle our way out of this mess.
And the perilous link between plastic and global warming can no longer be ignored. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says plastic accounted for 1.8 billion tons of greenhouse gases in 2019 and 3.4% of global emissions, a figure that could more than double by 2060.
Current governance on plastic pollution is really fragmented, so we need a global instrument and especially a legally binding instrument, because voluntary has clearly shown that it doesn't work.
Host country France also appealed to the representatives of nearly 200 countries to suspend unfair waste management systems and end high pollutant plastic manufacturing.
This means, first of all, that we must put a definitive end to a globalized and unsustainable model that consists of producing plastic in China or in OECD countries and then exporting it in the form of waste to developing countries which are less well equipped with waste treatment systems.
Large pieces of plastic in our sewers and in the world's oceans are, of course, a problem. But plastic breaks down into smaller and smaller pieces, eventually becoming microscopic, nano or microbe particles, and these are a much bigger threat. They've been detected in blood and breast milk, and they're everywhere, even in the ice sheets of the North and South Poles.
Our access to drinking water in Pacific Islands is at threat because of the climate crisis. And knowing that plastic pollution is contributing to that, I want to make sure that that is understood by all world governments who are here today.
Further meetings will take place in November and next year, with a treaty expected to be signed in 2025. Before then, a great many details have to be finalized, including production caps on new plastic manufacturing, how to finance and incentivize these changes, and how to enforce them. Natalie Malchas, CGTN, Paris.
For more now on global plastic pollution, let's bring in our panel. Joining us from Los Angeles is Deanna Cohen. She is co-founder and CEO of the Plastic Pollution Coalition. Also with us from Montpellier, Vermont, Michael Shank is the Director of Engagement of the Carbon Neutral Cities Alliance. Here in Washington, D.C., Sunday Leonard is the Program Management Officer for the Scientific and Technical Advisory Panel at the United Nations Environment Program. And from Paris, we're joined by Gianluca De Silva. He is Senior Program Coordinator for the Global Marine and Polar Program with the International Union for Conservation of Nature. Thank you, everyone, for being with us. Gianluca De Silva, let's start in Paris, where these UN talks took place this week. There was a second round of talks to negotiate a treaty to stop plastic pollution. What was accomplished at these talks?
Well, it started with a rather turbulent first few days, mainly with many countries are deciding or discussing issues of procedure. But having got through that, the countries actually got together and started discussing some of the co-elements. So we had some intensive discussions over the last 2 days. And today, our final day, some very interesting decisions were made on how to proceed forward. And as you can imagine, it's quite a complex problem. So getting agreement amongst the diverse groups of countries was quite a challenge. But I think we are making progress here.
So you say it's complex, Janneke, but there has been some progress. How confident are you that this will lead to some kind of treaty?
I think the timeline we've set, which is very ambitious, will force us to be active. And I think it does take the entire world to work together. We do have a divergent set of opinions from a variety of different countries, and it really is about finding that ground. I think ultimately today, even though it was a long discussion and a lot of negotiations, we are showing degrees of progress. So I am hopefully and confident that maybe we should be able to achieve this in the timeline proceeded, expected.
Right, okay. Sunday Leonard, the chief of the UN Environment Programme, told delegates, we cannot recycle our way out of this mess. The agency has published a blueprint to reduce plastic waste by 80% by 2040. What can you tell us about this plan, this blueprint?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, our executive director said we cannot recycle our way out, and that's just the truth about the issue. I think the question we need to ask ourselves is this: if recycle can solve the problem, why haven't we solved the problem? Currently, I think the data says that between 7 to 9% of plastic is being recycled. So recycling is part of the solution, but it's not the whole solution. I think part of what we need to think of is addressing some aspect of plastic that are not needed. So for example, single-use plastics, where we can have alternative solutions, then we should focus on using alternative materials, for example, in the packaging sector for plastics. And then so that means that we will have to consider maybe banning some plastics. That's part of the solution. But also is that there are some, and there are beneficial uses of plastic, there are some sectors where plastic is needed, which means that how do we use plastic within this sector? And that's where the concept of circular economy comes in, where we ensure that products are designed from the onset to make sure that waste is designed out of the process. That's, for example, removing harmful chemicals that makes it even difficult to recycle plastic in the first place, designing for durability so that we can use them for a long time before they become waste or need to be recycled. So those are examples of the kind of solutions that needs to be put in place. And putting these solutions in place doesn't only involve just the technical solution. It also needs to also think of how do we change business models, how do we consider the socioeconomic dimension of the problem and make sure that we create solutions in an integrated manner that is just and incorporates the need of developing countries, developed countries, the plastic producers, the plastic users, bringing those solutions together to lead us to the kind of future that we want, where plastic is only used for the beneficial use and not, and the harmful aspect of plastic is prevented.
Diana Kern, looking at some numbers here, plastic production has doubled in 20 years to more than 460 million tons. And just 10% of those plastics are actually recycled. The rest is put into landfills. What kind of international support are you seeing for the elimination of, say, single-use plastics?
Well, we've seen a major upswell in attention and energy put towards reducing single-use plastics, towards moving towards reuse, refill, repair, share models around the world, and plastic-free versions of those. We are looking as a global movement, as Plastic Pollution Coalition and the Break Free from Plastic movement, to create real circular systems. And these need to be better planned for near future implementation. What we have happening right now is we're using, the world is using, single-use plastic to deliver water and various things to people when this is not something that's necessary. I want to go back to what some of my colleagues have just said on this panel, which is that Plastic was never designed to be recycled, and it is still not designed to be recycled. So unfortunately, when we refer to it at the end of its life as waste, et cetera, the solutions and the false solutions that unfortunately are being considered because industry has such a big presence in these negotiations are chemical recycling and incineration and different forms that poison us again and again. So I think there's a major global movement of people who are all working towards a world free of plastic pollution and its toxic impact. And we're glad to see some emphasis in all of these negotiations on reduction and reuse in UNEP's roadmap. These are key elements of the solution, but we need them to happen rapidly. We need them to help us diminish plastic pollution. And I think what the report is missing is requiring industrial and corporate entities to produce material items to stop making toxic fossil fuel plastic.
Deanne, I want to talk a moment about recycling. You know, as I said a moment ago, just 10% of that 460 million tons is recycled, the rest going into landfills. But for recycling to be effective, it would require some kind of organization. It would require technology. What are you finding? Are countries prepared for that?
But countries have never been prepared for that. It's a myth that's been perpetuated by the petrochemical and plastic industry. You just need to recycle better. It's not possible to recycle a material better that was not designed to be recycled. So actually what needs to happen is we need to stop making so much of it. We need to stop, as my colleagues were just saying, using it for many of the single-use things that we currently use it for, because it's also made with chemical additives that are bad for human health and life on the planet.
Michael Shank, the United States is one of the biggest producers and consumers of plastics, but it favors an approach where countries develop their own national action plans to combat plastic pollution. The United States, for one, is keen on recycling, and as Deanne told us a moment ago, this is not something that can be recycled. It shouldn't have been made in the first place for single use. So where does the United States go with this?
We have a real opportunity to lead, and all my colleagues on this panel have laid out some really clear ways forward and solutions forward. The U.S. State Department issued a statement this week saying they don't want prescriptive approaches, but like your segment said early in this show, we do need a legally binding treaty. We have to have a legally binding treaty. Plastic can't be the default. And we can't keep avoiding a carbon tax. If we had a global price on carbon, then plastic wouldn't be so cheap. But plastic is cheap, and so people use it. And so we have to make it expensive. We have to tax the bad and subsidize the good. Currently, we're subsidizing fossil fuels to the tune of $6 trillion a year. And that's an IMF. That's an IMF data point. That's roughly 7% of global GDP. So we are taxing the bad, subsidizing the good. And I just want to speak to one awareness issue here as we think about engaging the public. So a lot of people know about plastic straws, how problematic they were, and they saw the plastic straw coming out of a turtle's nose and they changed their behavior. Or our cities at the Carbon Neutral Cities Alliance are enacting plastic bag bans. All of that is great. What we need more of, I think, for the general public, yes, in addition to a legally binding treaty, yes, in addition to taxing the bad and subsidizing the good, which we're currently doing the reverse of, is helping people understand that plastic is oil. I think when they think of oil, they think of cars. When they think of oil, they think of buildings for heat, et cetera. But when they think of oil, they don't think of plastic. When in fact, for the last 5 years, petrochemicals have been the leading driver of global oil demand ahead of transportation. So there's a lot of work to be done across the board here.
Right, and Michael, a legally binding treaty, for that to be effective, would it have to target production of plastics rather than elimination?
Yeah, so as my colleagues here have talked about, industry playing a role, unfortunately, in steering the conversation away from caps and production caps and things like that. But we absolutely have to partner with industry on this and put limits, caps on plastic production. But again, if we had a global carbon budget, which our cities have climate budgets to regulate how much agencies and departments can emit every year, if we had a global carbon budget, if we had a global carbon price on carbon, then industry would have every incentive to seek other alternatives that my colleagues have mentioned.
Sunday Leonard, the African continent has certainly taken the lead in the global battle against the use of plastics. 34 African nations have imposed full or partial bans and also heavy taxes on the use of plastics. What's driving the effort in Africa?
Yeah, I think there's significant awareness on the impact of plastic, and we see the effect of plastic in all African environments. Flood happening in countries like in Nigeria, most of the time is caused by drainage being clogged, and then you have rain and leads to flood and many devastating impacts. So African countries are realizing, especially because they are not actually responsible for majority of the production. Only a few African countries are producing plastic, but they are receiving the impact of plastic. And that's why countries realize that the starting point is to ban those plastic that are not needed in the first place, the single-use plastic. And we are seeing good results in Kenya, in Rwanda, that people can actually look for alternative solution if they don't have the ease of getting access to plastic, just as Michael said. So that's one of the reasons why African countries are really taking the lead in this, and they are very vocal in all of the discussion because they realize how much this is impacting them. Furthermore, because of the lack of waste management facilities in infrastructure in many of African countries, most of this plastic or waste generally are being burned. When you burn plastic that already contains some hazardous chemicals, including chlorinated chemicals, the outcome is the emission of, apart from contributing to greenhouse gas emission, it also releases unintended persistent organic pollutants, which we know are very harmful to human health. So that's another aspect that is pushing the drive among African nations to stop the use of single-use plastics.
Gianluca Da Silva, the French foreign minister addressed the gathering in Paris, that's Catherine Colonna, and she said if we don't act now, by 2050 there will be more plastic in the ocean than fish. How is plastics already impacting marine life, and by extension, I mean, how will it impact humans? Because if we look at the food chain, ultimately a lot of that becomes food for humans.
Exactly, and I think there's been a lot of evidence coming up that especially in the impacts of human health issues, and this has been brought to the attention of this body as we've been discussing it today. The practical point is that that waste which flows from the land into rivers and ultimately ends in the seas slowly breaks down, and it has multiple impacts. One, as many of you have already seen quite often, is a large number of marine mammals, animals actually ingesting plastic or that macroplastic and actually essentially getting their stomachs filled and suffering the consequences of that. A second reaction, which also has been discussed here, is the role of microplastics. Those plastics tend to break down in the marine environment into smaller pieces and then through that process enter the food chain. And what we see now is particularly, and this was brought up by many small island developing states at the negotiations, is that many of them depend on fish as a major source of their nutrition. And the worry is that by consuming so much that over time, there are potentially long-term health impacts that could result from this. So these are some of the issues that are coming through. The bottom line is that what we find is that plastic finds its way right through the entire food chain. And as your previous panelists mentioned, it's really a life cycle problem, right from production to that use and then to the end of it, life solutions. And in all of those points, plastic leaks into the environment.
Deanna, in between the California coast, the west coast of the United States, and Hawaii, there is something called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. It's a 620,000 square mile swirl of trash that is floating in the ocean. It was first seen in 1997. What is being done about that?
Well, there are many groups, many of whom are part of our coalition, who are working to do cleanups. Although I would say, and our focus is really looking to all the different source points and not solely focusing on cleanup. I think that it's a little bit of a smoke and mirrors game that industry plays by aligning themselves with and sponsoring cleanups. If you continue to focus on downstream, you don't actually address what's happening upstream. And what's happening upstream with plastic and plastic pollution is when we use it to package our food, our beverages, our beauty products, our cleaning products, our health products. Micro amounts of it leach into everything that we eat and drink, and it is a human health toxic issue for us. Mm-hmm. So plastic pollutes human health, animal health. It's a social justice issue. It's an environmental justice issue. It contributes to and exacerbates climate change. It's a wildlife issue. Basically, plastic is pollution. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is that, yes, it's in the ocean. That can be a starting point where people first learn about it.
Yep.
But cleaning it up in the ocean and using ships that are going to necessitate huge amounts of fuel to go out and try and pick something up that is not simply floating over 2,000 square miles in the ocean, but it's actually on the surface in all of the water strata on the bottom of the seafloor bed. We don't know how much. And it's not only the Great Pacific Garbage Patch on the Pacific Ocean. We have multiple gyre systems in all the major oceans in the world. And plastic is polluting us across the board everywhere. I like to say plastic knows no boundaries. Plastic pollution is everywhere. It's not one country's problem. It's every country's problem. And these solutions, again, which include incineration or euphemistic terms like waste to energy or waste to fuel, are not the solutions that we need at the end of life and downstream. We need to really go back and focus on all the source points. So I think what we have with this global plastic treaty is that we can create a highly effective tool. If it's comprehensive and binding and enforceable, we can enforce this global plastics treaty that stops plastic pollution at the source and addresses the deadly consequences of plastics' endless toxic existence in a historic, it's a historic opportunity to set humanity on a better path forward.
Michael, talk to us about the relationship or the connection between plastics and global warming and whether this could be something that could force or motivate governments to act more forcefully against plastics pollution.
Yeah, there was a report released in last week by Pacific Environment, which is a global nonprofit, that looked at how much we need to cut in plastic production by 2050 to stay within 1.5 degree warming above pre-industrial temps. And according to their report, which was covered in the press, we need a cut in plastics production by 75% by 2050. To stay within 1.5 degrees. And as I mentioned earlier, IEA in 2018, 5 years ago, were tracking petrochemicals as, again, the leading driver of global oil demand, well ahead of transportation. So we have the data. We know that plastics and petrochemicals are driving oil demand well above transportation. A lot of people don't know that. As I mentioned earlier, when people think of oil, they think of cars. When people think of oil, they think of buildings and heat. They don't think of plastics. So the job is on us, national governments, subnational governments, to help the public understand that so that they too change behavior in addition to this legally binding treaty that we need to talk about. Something our cities are doing too is really promoting circular economy. It was already mentioned on the conversation today, but cities in the Carbon Neutral Cities Alliance and above and beyond are prioritizing circular economy. They're prioritizing consumption-based emissions, which is new for cities, to look at food and fashion and the plastics therein in those industries. So finally, subnationals are really tackling this head on and changing industry as a result.
Okay, and that's where we have to leave it. Thanks to all of you for being with us on the show. That is it for this edition of The Heat. I'm Arnand Naidu in Washington, D.C.
What's actually going on in Africa through the perspective of an African? How are things really going between China and Africa? What's the narrative of this relationship? Well, get a perspective with China-Africa Talk. Hear from African diplomats, entrepreneurs, academics, Chinese natives, and more. Get on our wavelength every week to find out what's real with China Africa Talk. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. We'll see you there.